Trendstorm.
Welcome to Radio Sputnik and Trendstorm. My name is Andrew Kripko, and I'm going to give you a forward-focused analysis of things to come and the general trends behind them. Here's what we have for you today. Afghanistan. To surge or not to surge? What had once seemed like an imminent U.S. troop surge to Afghanistan is now in question, as reports are emerging that Trump is apparently pushing back against his general's plans. Lebanon. Hezbollah versus Daesh. The international media is abuzz about an impending anti-Daesh offensive along the mountainous Lebanese-Syrian border, which will interestingly see the participation of both U.S. Special Forces and Hezbollah. And also, Venezuela, military coup attempt or terrorist attack? The world can't stop talking about the incident that took place at a military base in central Venezuela, with Caracas condemning it as a terrorist attack, while many in the West believe it was a military coup attempt. Opening up this edition of Trendstorm is the U.S.'s Afghan strategy. What had once seemed like an imminent U.S. troop surge to Afghanistan is now in question, as reports are emerging that Trump is apparently pushing back against his general's plans. According to information from the media, Trump is unhappy that his military leaders haven't formulated a long-term strategy for winning the war in Afghanistan, and are instead looking only at short-term tactical solutions. The president campaigned on an anti-war platform, yet he also promised to be tough on terrorism, so he's caught himself in a conundrum when it comes to Afghanistan. On the one hand, the U.S. is clearly losing the war, and both the Taliban and Daesh are on the upsurge, with the former controlling or influencing roughly half of the country's territory. Although there are many differences between the two groups, the U.S. designates them both as terrorists, hence why Trump has a publicly plausible reason in the eyes of the American public to increase the military's commitment to the conflict. That being said, the American people are exhausted by the war and have little patience to see it indefinitely drag on even longer than the 16 years that it's already been waged for, and the endemic corruption associated with it, as revealed by the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, disgust a lot of people. The core of the president's decision-making calculations comes down to whether he's going to go with his populist side and downscaling the U.S.'s formal military footprint in Afghanistan, or if he'll give in to the military-industrial complex in going forward with his general's plans for another troop surge. The catch, though, is that even if he doesn't agree to the surge, he might hatch a crafty workaround to still allow informal American forces to remain in the country through the use of private military contractors, as has been reportedly suggested by White House Chief Strategist Steve Bannon and a few of his friends and fellow presidential advisors who are CEOs of relevant companies, such as Eric Prince from what was previously called Blackwater and Steven Feinberg from DynCorp. And here's the kicker. Whether it's ultimately uniformed U.S. troops or private mercenaries contracted out by the Pentagon, any potential military surge might not even be about fighting terrorism like it could be claimed, but about protecting Afghanistan's $1 trillion mineral reserves that the New York Times reported late last month Trump is supposedly interested in extracting. So folks, this is a recurring theme on Trendstorm, what the U.S. is going to do in Afghanistan, and I'm very pleased to announce that we're joined by Mr. Jalees Hazir to speak about this more in depth. Jalees is an independent writer from Pakistan.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Jalees, taking aside Trump as an individual for a moment and looking at the interests and strategy of the U.S. as a whole, what do you think it wants to achieve right now in Afghanistan? Does it want to train and equip Kabul's forces, fight Daesh and or the Taliban, secure and extract mineral resources, a combination thereof, or perhaps something else?
I think minerals and resources are always important. But in this case, I don't think that's the primary reason for the U.S. to be there or for wanting to stay on there. I think there are far more important reasons for the U.S., and to my mind, what comes first is to retain a military foothold in the country, and that gives it control over the territory, or at least a part of it. And then that territory is to be used for spawning and spreading terrorism in the neighboring countries and going right up to the Muslim regions of Russia. Then this is essentially to destabilize or to keep the region destabilized or to increase destabilization in the region. That, of course, other than the fact that this is the classical divide and rule imperial formula of retaining control and hegemony over regions, this is also in the current context a way to subvert the regional connectivity and regional integration processes that have been unleashed by, you know, many forums led by China and Russia, like SCO and Eurasian Economic Union and the Belt and Road Initiative of China. And there's a lot of momentum towards regional integration and connectivity, and the US, by being here, can, you know, throw a spanner in all of that. Yes, I think it's there essentially to make sure that nothing positive comes out of it. And of course, the poppy and the minerals also figure in, but they are more like a bonus. You didn't mention poppy and the trade of poppy, both illicit and what they are shipping off to their pharmaceutical companies. There have been reports, you must have read those, about the warlords and how they are involved in, you know, the CIA is paying them money and then they're buying off poppy. There's a whole Afghanistan, they say, is the source of something like 90%. I'm not sure about the exact percentage.
Yeah, it's a very high percent. But Jaleesa, I want to ask you something else on top of this. You know, expanding on everything that you just described to me about the geostrategic importance of Afghanistan to the U.S. deep state. I mean, at the end of the day, we have the prime decision maker, President Trump himself, who has four choices in front of him at this very moment. And these are to either deploy more uniformed troops, to contract more mercenaries, to do a mix of both, or to do neither and potentially downscale the U.S.'s presence in Afghanistan, which, as you explained, probably won't happen. Now, when we look at these choices, he's torn between Bannon, the military-industrial complex, and his own populist base in deciding what to do. So, Jaleesa, what course of action do you ultimately foresee President Trump going with, and why?
Okay, like, of course, like you said, downscaling doesn't look like an option because given what the US wants to do here. So unless, of course, there's a possibility that it gets Indian troops to augment its effort in Afghanistan. There was something about it, but it's just something which is not confirmed. But because it has to retain the power to control at least whatever it controls now. I don't see it limiting, although that would be the best option for the region, for the world, even for the US itself and its citizens. But somehow, given the, you know, if you look at, you don't see any substantial change in the way the US looks at itself vis-a-vis the world. Or there might be slight changes in its tactics, but the overall direction remains the same. And I think that Trump would keep the troops at the same level and maybe add some mercenaries. I don't think a troop surge. I somehow feel, given, you know, one reads about Eric Prince and how he's close to this current administration with his sister on the cabinet and him also having these contacts. And of course, the private security companies have also emerged as a strong lobby in the US. They might want to give them something and maybe try out a different thing. Like in Iraq, they were able to really brutalize the whole society. So maybe they want to give that shot now.
Jaleesa, thank you very much. You provided a very solid overview of the situation and why the U.S. is even in Afghanistan and why it might remain there for the foreseeable future. Thanks for that. Now we're going to switch over and speak to Mr. Saeed Ali Zia Jafri. He's a research analyst at the Global Village Space who focuses on strategic affairs of the South Asian region and counterterrorism.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Syed, Trump's on the fence and choosing between sending more U.S. troops to Afghanistan or outsourcing this role to private contractors. So, from the U.S.'s military strategic perspective, what are the pros and cons of both?
You know, the Americans have been dithering on an Afghan policy for the past 4 months, ever since they dropped the mother of all bombs on ISIS camps in Nangarhar. Now, the problem is that whatever the case is, professional military is something very different from private military contractors. Militaries around the world operate on a set principles and set guidelines. But when you talk about private military contractors, they are absorbed from many of the strings and pulls that are attached with a professional military output. So therefore, it would allow the Americans a bit of flexibility in their operations. But at the same time, it would not be of significant impact when it comes to fighting a very virulent force in the Taliban, forces in the Taliban and the ISISK. So while it allows alacrity of the use of force, it does not allow the Americans to leverage their firepower and potential to in the length and breadth of Afghanistan. But a pro in this could be that these military contractors can adopt a very advisory role, which is important for the Afghan National Army right now. But the biggest drawback in it is that these contractors, by the end of the day, are after their own profits. They don't have that sense of patriotism or something. They would exploit local contractors. They would exploit local ethnic issues for their own benefits. So this is where I feel that they would not be able to create much of an impact inside Afghanistan. And the other thing that I want to point out regarding these contractors is that they may turn out to be more ruthless on people who are not part of actual combat. And this could lead to more animosity with the Americans among the general public.
Okay, well, this is actually a good point to segue into the next question I want to ask you. If we approach the mercenary soldier topic from the other side of the spectrum, how much of a difference is there between the consequences that more uniformed U.S. troops would have on the simmering situation in Afghanistan compared to if there were more mercenaries dispatched instead?
As we talked earlier about the fact that more military troops would not create much of an impact, it would not dent the war fighting wherewithal of the Afghan Taliban or the ISISK for that matter. But the problem is that if military troops can't do anything, how would these contractors do something? They simply cannot balk the onslaught of the Taliban, which is in full swing. Although it has temporarily petered out for a while, I don't know why, it has gone into hibernation since the past week or so. But I think they would recuperate and launch a series of attacks pretty soon. But the problem is that those contractors would not be able to make much of an impact in the same way as the uniformed military troops cannot do anything. But one thing which can be advantageous for the Americans is that, you know, a common Afghani citizen is not well conversant with the fact as to who a contractor and who is a contractor and who isn't. So maybe a person draped in an American army attire, you know, attracts more hatred from the common Afghan perspective than a person not in uniform. He may be able to build some camaraderie with his Afghan counterparts and even the people in his area of operations. And this probably may be a minuscule step towards improving people-to-people relations at the tactical level.
Yeah, this is very, very interesting, Syed. I had never thought about that. Well, we got about 2 minutes left, so I want to wrap up with a final question about the real intentions that Trump might have in dispatching, you know, more troops or more mercenaries or both to Afghanistan, because there's been a lot of talk lately in the media that Trump wants to tap into the country's $1 trillion mineral reserves. So how do you see this kind of figuring into the general equation of whether or not he's going to go with troops, mercenaries, or a combination of both?
I think this story is in its nascent stages, and I would not like to comment on its credibility for now. But all I want to say is, looking at Trump, we can understand he's trying to take up a brawl with Iran, much to the chagrin of his administration. He's trying to take up a brawl with Korea right now. So probably he has in his mind that, okay, I need to stay in Afghanistan as well, because I need to look around the region for the Americans. But the problem it could have on the overall American strategy is that, be it mercenaries or be it the American forces, this thing would not work. If they have to stay here for minerals, then let me tell you, they would have to stay here for another century, because the Afghans have it in their blood that they fight for their land and they fight for their assets. And if we are to believe that they are going after minerals, then let me tell you, the Afghans would give them a very hard, ready nose.
All right, Saeed, thank you. That was very detailed. I really appreciated how you put things into perspective and you explained the very important difference between private military contractors and uniformed U.S. troops. That was very useful. Thank you.
Trendstorm.
So folks, if we reflect back on what Jaleez and Saeed both shared with us, I think that we can come to the conclusion that the U.S. is in Afghanistan for the foreseeable future, no doubt, but not for the reasons that it says. I mean, it says it wants to fight terrorism, but in reality, isn't it possibly creating the conditions for that very same terrorism to spread throughout the region? And could it be doing that for Machiavellian purposes? And last but not least, could private military contractors be an easier way to do that? So folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@spoonikanews.com or find us on Facebook. Stay with us.